Grow and Chill with Noel Clark and Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
So we've got Quentin Aaron.
Don't lie, my G.
Quentin,
are
you with
them? How are you?
Hello!
Quentin, my G. What's happening, brother?
What's going on, man? What's going on? How are you? Big fan.
What?
What?
You of me? Shut up, man. I'm a big fan. Come on,
we're
G.
Big fans
come
of
on,
you.
G. Yeah. For real.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
How's it treating you in Glasgow? Because that shit be cold, you know. Us black people, we have to be careful of the cold because they be trying to kill us in Scotland. So just, you know,
you
talk
know
to
what's
me.
Funny, though? I'm a rarity. I'm probably the only black person I know that loves the cold. I'm enjoying this weather right now.
We're about to fall out. I'm about to get on the train and come up there and knock some sense into you. How can you be talking that you like the cold?
I'm from New York.
All right. Yeah, I know it can be cold in New York, too. It can be cold. But you get them good summers, though. You get those good summers.
So we're here to talk about your new film, which is called Halfway, and people might know you before, they'll definitely know you before from The Blind Side.
Boom, yes.
So we just want to talk a little bit about Halfway, the new film.
Well, you know, we're actors, so we know it's new to the world, but you shot this like, what, a year ago?
Almost 2.5 years ago.
Wow,
now.
Yeah. Sometimes films take a while.
It's in the pipeline.
Yeah. Alright, yeah, so tell us about the movie and then let's talk about it, because I enjoyed it myself. I'm a big fan of how you got up with them cows. I don't be dealing with animals, man. Especially animals that can't train, like dogs and stuff like that. And cows, when that cow was sucking your fingers, I was like, oh, he's going to lose his hand or something.
It's basically a film that came about from a director who's actually from London, Ben Carrot.
That's
he
right.
wrote it, and it was originally about a young British kid who was fish out of water coming into Wisconsin to live on his family farm, but he wanted to change that aspect of it and make it more relatable to today's society and the social injustice, what's going on in the prison system and today with minorities going to prison for repeated crimes and stuff. So, you know, about the recidivism issue. And so Halfway kind of speaks on that, and in a sense where it takes the story of Byron, who was recently released from prison.
Yeah.
And it follows his life through his life on the farm.
Yeah.
He's the fish out of water, you know, in a sense where he's doing his probation out on the family farm, and it's totally outside of his element.
Yeah, and it's his stepbrother's farm, right? Stepbrother in the
farm. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. His stepbrother got him out of prison, the favor he had to return, you know, by, his due diligence on the farm. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's a story about choices. I like to put it in that sense because everything we do in life is based off the choices that we make.
That's right.
And Byron was presented with the opportunity to either make a better man of himself or go back into his usual ways and possibly land back in prison.
I think it's a beautiful film. Like, I watched the whole thing. For me, it was a real subtle movie. Today's movies is like you sit down, you put on your mad glasses and it's explosions and everything. So it's always good to see a character-driven movie. And I mean, I got to tell you, man, I've seen a few of your things and obviously everyone's like, blindside. But this performance was good. I'm talking like, they're all like, Case Manchester by the Sea. But your subtle performance in this was some good shit, brother. I got to tell you, like,
I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Really was good. You're right, it is about choices, but it was interesting for me to see that, you know, the director chose to go that way because it added a new dynamic. Like when you meet the old man from the other farm.
That was my favorite.
You know, without giving too much away to the audience.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
Jeffrey DeMond is an amazing actor, amazing talent, and just really cool guy. You know, he was fun to be around on set. Definitely, he's one of my favorite characters to work
but
with.
It speaks about also, you know, you have the young guys being overtly racist to your character or being quite rude, but then even the guy that is really supportive and really friendly has that sort of ignorant racism, not in a bad way, but like he's calling you colored when he doesn't know that it's not acceptable anymore. And it's like, it speaks about society, about the way people are treated, and even if it's not intentionally, and how there needs to be more awareness about this whole thing. And I thought it was a really good by the director and writer.
Because your character, Byron, he's the only black farmer in the area. Or becomes the only black farmer. And I've got to say, you're becoming like the king of...
Living with white people.
Living with white family.
You're the king. Byron, like, the king of living with white folks.
Like, again? He's got another...
Too funny. I accept that.
Yeah.
I like to think I can get along with anyone.
Yeah.
People person.
Maybe that's like your film niche. Like every family in your film, they're just all white.
You, man, you got to just be like up in the white people's house, living the good... Listen, talk to me about these cows, bro. You got to talk to me about these cows.
Oh, man, the cows are awesome. It's funny because when they were teaching me how to milk them, they said you have to talk to them. You have to walk up. You talk to them and rub their behind. So I was like, okay. So it's
like a woman.
Pretty much like you. Yeah, exactly.
That's how my wife do me, bro. That's how my wife do me. She milk it, and she rub my behind and talk to me in my ears.
It was awesome, man. It was definitely an experience. The Cavs were hilarious, man. Yeah. The way they just suck on your finger. It was funny, the first day one of them almost took my ring. I was like, whoa, I'm going to need that back.
That's what I'm talking about, man. Yeah, the baby one that got out was cute. I was like, how's he touching these cows, right? Man? And then the one that got out, I was like, okay, that one's cute. You know, I could live with that. And then he started sucking your fingers. I mean, just for the audience note, obviously the film's not about cows, but it's a really touching movie about this character who comes out on parole and ends up on his stepbrother's farm. And then, of course, realizes that the stepbrother is not as genuine as we believed, but we don't want to give too much away. But, I mean, I really want our listeners and everyone to see this film. I want to tell you, my brother, that you were brilliant in the movie. And again, once again, subverting and defying people's expectations of what we're supposed to do, man. I loved it.
Appreciate that. Thank you, man. Definitely.
And how long are you going to be over in the UK?
Sunday, I will be going down to London for a few days.
Nigga, listen! We're in London, boy. You better come check
me. We're in London.
Okay.
I love how this has just turned into a casual team.
Well, we brothers, man. Black people have to stick together, man. Because you whitey's always trying to kill us and shit. And, like, that's what we, you know, we're brothers. You feel me, bro? I know you feel me. I know you have to. You gotta be PC.
Exactly.
You gotta be PC. I don't have to be PC. It's my show. I said, what the fuck I want.
I feel you.
Back row and chill with Noel Clark and Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
Jacob Hawley, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
These are little studio people over there that are way of the applause to everybody.
That's nice of them, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? Get ready for the applause, which I'm sure you will be getting lots at Edinburgh Fringe.
Yeah, I hope so.
So what kind of show is like a one-man?
One-man, yes, it's just me. It doesn't sound like much fun, to be honest with you, because it's just me talking for an hour.
Talking to yourself?
Hopefully talking to people if people buy tickets. It's a funny show. It's a little bit political. Some of it is a little bit, not sad, but like personal. And yeah, it's quite funny.
Did you write it yourself?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, write it all myself.
How do you start writing? Is it a 40-minute show?
About an hour.
An hour show? Yeah, how do you even write? What do you do? Do you do the little 10 minutes and squish them together?
Yeah, well, kind of, yeah. So, I mean, like, I've been doing stand-up for, 4 years now.
Okay.
So, and some of the material I've been doing for 2 years, they would have started as, 3-minute little bits, and then they've grown and got bigger and longer. And, yeah, so now...
What's your show called?
Howl. I have to really enunciate that because of my accent. I naturally say howl.
Yeah.
And you can't hear the L at the end, and people just think it's a question.
People can't say how. Well, I thought you said owl. An owl! I was like, oh, maybe it's an hour show about birds.
All about birds.
Birds of a feather.
That twist their heads around. No, it's called Howl.
Cool. Why is it called Howl?
Well, originally it was named after the Allen Ginsberg poem Howl. Have you read it?
I've not either,
to be perfectly honest.
Okay, great.
But yeah, it was.
Why did you name it after that?
Because it's too long a poem to read. But basically, it was you have to name your show a long time before the actual thing.
Oh.
So I had to name it in January. And at the time, I thought I was going to write this really long, funny piece of material about that poem. And then I started doing the bit of material, and I thought maybe it's not going to be a very long bit of material. And then, now I don't do any material.
So it's an accident. But it could always be, it'd be like, because why is it called Howl? Because you were going to howl with laughter.
Yeah. I'll take that. I'm open for suggestions. Yeah. If you've got any other suggestions about how I can make the title work.
So funny. Howl.
There we go. Yeah,
that works for me.
Whenever anyone asks me now, I'm going to say that. I'm going to say it because people howl with laughter whilst watching the show.
So you've done stand up for 4 years. Where did you start?
In London.
Are you from London?
No, I'm from just outside in Stevenage. Yeah.
Stevenage.
Have you been?
I've not had the pleasure of going to Stevenage.
Why have you not been?
I'm a Londoner and I tend to stick to London.
Where did you grow up in London?
I was born in Lewisham. So.
Were you really?
Yeah.
So you're from South?
Yeah.
I live in South now.
Where do you live?
Camberwell.
Now I live in Peckham.
Do you?
We're just down the road from each other, mate.
Yeah,
I love it. Love it.
But no, yeah, so I'm from Stevenage. I moved to London. I went to uni in London and then I started doing stand up straight away.
So where did you do it first?
My first gig was in a club in North London called Downstairs at the King's Heads.
Oh, the King's Head.
I was awful. I was really bad. I just wanted to be Russell Brand. So I was wearing a really tight black blazer.
Ooh.
And tight black jeans and
eyeliner.
Not quite eyeliner, but yeah, I still look ridiculous. But yeah, and that was a long time ago now. But yeah.
Cool. And do you remember what your first stand-up was about?
Because I wanted to be like Russell Brand, I wanted to be really controversial and talk about big topics and stuff. So I was trying to talk about religion and stuff like that, and it's not very me. And so it didn't really suit me very well.
My things that tickle me, my funny bones, is awkward situations.
Okay.
Or I'm just so interested in what happens, like when somebody falls over, not really them falling over, but what do they do to save that? like.
Oh, okay. Or, so when people style it out.
Yeah. So yeah. Or when someone, like, it's happened to me a lot in my life where I've gone to like shake someone's hand and they've like not seen it and turned away. Ooh. And then I've been like, how do?
What's your go-to? Do you scratch your head? Is that your sort of way of getting out of?
Well,
that?
Now I'm like, oi, mate.
Oh, so you insist if someone shakes your hand?
I'm shaking your hands up.
Okay. What if someone wants to go for a handshake but you go for a hug? How do you feel about that?
Oh well, then they just tend to cut my breasts and it's really awkward and it's just you go in there or
just
you
get great.
Or you don't know whether you go in for a kiss or
yeah,
not.
I don't like
I've
that.
Had someone just sort of kiss my earlobe.
Do you like that?
Quite softly. I mean, it felt nice, but I was like, I don't know you. This is like someone's dad or something really awkward. Yeah, I think there should be like maybe a lesson or something when you grow up, like how to
greet people.
How do you know? What do we do?
Yeah, absolutely. So is that your favourite thing, awkward situations?
Awkward situations, yeah. That's just really tickled me.
I've got some of them in my show.
Oh, really?
I've got a lot of them in my
show. Okay, great. Are they from your own experience?
From my own experience,
perfect.
Yeah.
I love that.
The end of my show is talking about when my sister had her kid and me and my family went and we got really drunk and they tried to kick us out of the hospital because we were too drunk.
You were drunk in the hospital?
In the hospital, yeah.
Well, I can imagine that would be...
And we were using the gas and air. You know, like you get the gas and air out the walls. We were having a bang on that whilst my sister was next door having the kid.
Oh, and your poor sister was like, where's my gas and air?
Yeah, we had it all.
And you're like, I don't know, babe, we're just looking for it.
Yeah, and they tried to kick us out of the hospital.
Well, that'll do it. I mean, yeah, has she had any more kids since then?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
And to be fair, the second one, the most recent one, we were very well behaved.
Okay, you learned your lesson.
We just smoked, we didn't...
Oh, okay. That's way more chill. You know what I mean? Gas and air bring you up, smoking bring you down,
yeah,
it'd be cool.
We were just hanging out.
That's crazy. I've toyed with the idea of doing stand-up.
Have you really?
Yeah, because I make that's what I do. I'm a comedian and I make comedy sketches.
Okay,
and
cool.
Like comedy shows, and but I've not done anything live.
Do you know what you would do if you were to do stand-up? Do you have any ideas?
Yes, I do. I've kind of thought about it and either... Yeah, again, awkward situations.
Okay.
I have, like, a serious... hilarious history of dating life. I'm
okay.
Like, I'm terrible at it. And also, I am 70% deaf in one ear.
Okay.
That has also brought about many funny moments in
my life.
Do
you want to try some on me? Do you want to try a story on me? Like some stand-up?
Some stand-up?
Yeah.
You're going to put me on the hot seat right now.
Yeah,
this
go,
is
go,
my
go,
show,
go,
dude.
Go,
you're
go,
putting
go,
me
go,
on
go,
the hot
go,
seat.
Go, just try a little bit.
Okay, I'm trying to think of like the funniest story. Okay, once there was a guy who was chasing me through an airport,
uh-huh.
And I had like headphones on, so I was just like bopping away. And then
a guy was chasing you through an airport.
I know, right?
What?
He was trying to like flag me down, and he was like, yeah. hey, and he ran up and he finally caught up with me, and he was like, hey, I've been like shouting at you since the ticket booth.
Uh-huh.
He's like, well, are you deaf? And I just turned and showed him my hearing aid. I was like, oh yeah. And he was like, I'm so sorry, can I buy you dinner? this is really not going wrong. And I was like, yes, you can fucking buy me dinner, absolutely.
And how long have you been together now?
9 years. That's in fact, yes, Gerald. I mean, you know, bless his soul, he's dead now. But it was good. Another one was I was in bed with a lover,
okay.
And I didn't have the hearing aid in, so
okay.
It's always a bit of an odd time when you
right.
Can't, when you can't hear.
Do you find that men try to speak up a bit more in that situation when you're not wearing your hearing
yeah,
aid?
Yeah, if they're trying to like talk dirty or something, I'm like, you've got to shout!
So the neighbours can hear.
Yes, because otherwise I can't. And there was a really confusing, I need to remember exactly what he said, but he whispered something extremely dirty into my ear.
Okay.
And because I was deaf, I didn't hear it. And I thought he said, I'm only happiest when I'm with you. So he said this thing, and I turned around and was like, babe, that's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. And he looked at me like...
What is the filthy thing that you said?
I can't remember. It was something,
you can remember.
It was something about putting something somewhere.
Right.
And like, his reaction, the ultimate confusion of me just being like, oh, my God, I love you. He's like, well, she is kinky.
Yeah, genuinely.
So,
do you think you talk about sex on stage quite a lot?
I mean, I clearly have, like, autopiloted to that, haven't I?
Yeah. So I never talk about sex on stage.
You never, because you've never had it.
I mean, you caught me out, but that is actually why, yeah.
But one day you will.
One day.
And then you can add it to your show.
Yeah, yeah.
So
well, next year's show is all going to be about my first time.
Okay. All guys, get your tickets in. Jacob's first time.
Yeah, but this show's going to be good as well. I should
okay.
say that, yeah, even though there's no sexual stories in it.
There's just political stories in this one.
Is it? Well, it's not that political. I think I might, like, I've... Some of it's political, but I think the sort of people that like my stuff don't usually like political comedy. Do you like political comedy?
Not really, because I don't find politics too funny at the moment.
Right, yeah,
to
exactly.
To be quite frank.
Exactly, but, yeah, but I think you'd like my stuff then. People who don't like political comedy usually like my stuff.
Okay, maybe you'll swing me round.
Yeah.
Back Row and Chill with Noel Clark and Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
So a huge welcome to Coco Brown. Welcome.
Hi.
Okay.
You get an applause as well, babe.
Thanks.
Of course you do.
Can I do that? Can I call you Coco?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
It's encouraged.
Great.
if you want, right?
I'm with it, I'm with
it. But you have to stick with that now. You can't change it.
I'm with it. Oh, don't worry, I'm with it. I was with it before we even asked you, so it's all good.
Is that your real name? Yeah, it's the name that everyone calls me. My birth name is Kareen, and it's spelled K-R-E-I-N. But when you ever try and say it in a club or, you know, when you're, like, networking, you're like, hi, my name's Kareen. And they're like, Kareena? Corinne. And you're like, no, babes. And you know what's easy? Coco. K-O-K-O.
But I love that name.
Same letters. That's really
nice. I'm called Johanna with an A. Everyone's like, Johanna? Are you Swedish? Like, just J. Yeah, I know, people. Do you know what? I kind of, like, really envied kids when they were called just, like, Emma, Jane,
Sally.
I just want a normal name. Yeah. Kind of exciting times. You have got a show on at the Roundhouse, Camden.
Yes. Yeah, I do. At my home. That's like my home venue.
Oh, you're from the north.
I love, yeah. Born and raised in Kilburn. I was about to do Gunfingers, and I'm like, no.
I would have been with it.
Politically correct. How did that happen? And also, what is the show about?
It happened because I've been working with the Roundhouse for like 2 years, started kind of creating a little bit of work with them, and said to them, look, I really want to make this show about being mixed race because there's not much about that. Support me? And they were like, yeah, sure. And I was like, great, this is cool. What I need. That's exactly how it happened. I told them what I needed, and yeah, they just did it and then did some more, and yeah, they're great. And so the show's called White, and it's about being mixed race. It's about being a mixed race black woman and just identity and stuff like that, full of spoken word and vocal looping. So yeah, like the stuff that Ed Sheeran does.
Awesome.
But also the stuff that like some other great vocal loopers like Grace Savage, who's a beatboxer.
I find that magic. Like, I've seen people do that with their little boxes and I don't understand how it works. So for me,
That's cool.
I'm just like, oh, press the buttons and I can hear four of them.
You're going to have to come into my studio and play.
This is, oh yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah, we'll do like skill swap. Like,
yeah, let's do it.
Teach me how to say words on the radio well. And I'll teach you how to say words into a machine well.
That's not something I can do, but okay, we can see. Yeah, because you can take stuff. Have you seen the movie Baby Driver?
No.
Oh, because he does that. He like always recording stuff. Like, he records stuff he hears and he goes back home and he puts it in his little box and then
and he makes music out.
And
it's quite cool.
It and he loops it. Yeah, it was great.
I love that. I'm all about electronic, like, weird music that you can create out of things. And
computer music.
Yes, computer music. Busy. I'm just a nerd who happened to do theatre and music. Like, that's what it is.
Where did you study theatre?
I never studied theatre in, like, drama school. Like, I never went to drama school.
Oh, in my room in the mirror.
Boom. Yeah. You know, I did the performing arts BTEC, all of that classic stuff. Oh, yes. And then I was like, you know, theatre and, like, going to a auditions is really soul destroying. Back then I used to be a brown girl with dark curly hair, so like textbook mixed race chick. And so there'd be 1,000 other mixed race chicks who look just like that in the same room and you're like, wow, there is no difference between us except maybe, like, you know, how we say a word.
I mean that's kind of a universal. I don't know if you guys find that in auditions, but like,
yep.
I've gone in for an audition and you're feeling pretty confident, you're like, oh, I think I've got this, I think I can do this. And you go in there and there is literally just 12 carbon copies of you, and you feel so, I'm like, oh, that's just like 12 blonde girls, great.
So I decided that I was like over that, so I was like, I'm gonna start making my own work because fuck the system.
I didn't go that far. I remember at drama school I kept getting mistaken. I had brown hair then. And I kept getting mistaken for some of the other girls on the course, and I was like, I don't look like her. So like a day before we did our final showcase in front of all the agents and everything, I dyed my hair bright ginger. So like, I was just like, fuck this bitch.
I bet all the other brunettes were like, fuck.
So there was just like a sea of brunettes and then me, like the ginge at the front. It's good I got an agent.
Amazing.
Hopefully not just because of the agent.
Putting you up for ginger rolls. Yeah,
I need to start changing my hair to do that now.
Yeah, I recommend it. Everybody turn ginger and you stick out.
Okay.
I also got a bit of heckling and abuse. Weirdly.
Cool. That's nice.
It was either like, people either love it, like loads of guys being like, oh, you're such a fiery redhead, meh. And it's like,
what was that guy voice like? What was that?
Okay, well, you're guys, so you don't understand, but that is so, hashtag related.
Hashtag related. Yeah, or people were really negative and like shouted, like, ginger bitch. And, like,
okay.
Like, fair play. Okay. It's the same guy that said both. I was very
confused. One guy heckling from the crowd.
I was like, do you like it? Do you not like it? What do I do? Okay, cool.
He was indecisive, you know.
So it's like one woman.
Yeah, it's a solo show.
Yes, queen.
It's just me talking about like my struggles and stuff. It's just me and my loop stations just talking about being mixed race and being a mixed race black woman and kind of exploring all of that in a fun way.
Cool.
Well, you know, just the way that I would do it, really.
Where's your heritage from, both sides? What's your...
My dad is Jamaican and my mum is Irish.
Nice.
So
Irish-Jamaican.
I'm an Irish-Jamaican, yeah, absolutely. I've never been to either island, so Island being Island Island.
the island and the other Jamaica island.
Yeah, never been either of those places, but I think both of those will be such an experience.
I wanted to find out, like, my, like, genealogy, because you can now, the technology's there. So I did that thing where you, like, do a DNA test, and I've sent my sample off, and you have to spit, like, quite a lot. I thought it would be just, like, seriously.
It's not a swab.
No, it's not a swab.
I thought it was a swab.
It's literally, you get, like, a test tube, and then there's a line, and it's, like, fill it up to there, make sure it's all spit, no bubbles. So I was there, like, at first I was like, okay, I can do this. Okay. And then after a few minutes, I was, like, hacking into this thing, and then I was, like, I had dry mouth. I was like, there's nothing left. I've got nothing.
I've got nothing left for you, man.
You've completely stuck me dry. Yes, I've set it off.
I've got nothing left.
Yeah, they've sent it off and it has to go around the world. It has to go to the Netherlands and then the actual labs in like LA or something.
No.
And then they're going to send it back to me in a few weeks. But I'm going to get a full genealogy of where all my ancestors are from, all over the world.
That is sick.
I'm hoping for something a little bit tropical. And yeah, and if they also at the same time do like a full medical history thing, and I had to sign a waiver to say that I had to accept what I was gonna find out about myself, because they tell you like the likelihood of you getting Alzheimer's, the likelihood of you getting breast cancer, which is all good things
to know.
Because then you can like make you can prep yourself and get some steps. But they were like, you have to understand the psychology behind knowing this, like if you are in the top bracket of maybe getting this or maybe getting that.
I didn't think it sounds so depressing finding about yourself.
Like, no, it's like finding out. Would you like to know when or how you would die?
No.
Because that's what that sounds like. Would you like to know when or how you would die?
I'd be curious. I'm a very curious man, so
once you look, you can't unlook.
Yeah, you can't unlearn what you have learned.
Yeah, but then I'll just change it, you know, I'll find a different way to die.
No, because that's how it is. You can't change
I don't
faces.
Think that's how it works.
No. They'd be like one of those films where like you end up causing your death because you find out about it, and then you do everything you can.
Final destination.
Yeah, it's not final destination.
Exactly.
What do you think you are?
What, like genetically?
Yeah.
I think that I've got probably like some Scandinavian or something, because when I went to Iceland, everyone was talking to me in Icelandic, and I was like, dude, I'm English, I don't know. But thank you, because everyone in Iceland's hot.
I mean,
right?
So what is like, in the water there?
I was so honoured. I was like, oh my god. Yes. And of course, I want to be a little bit from Wakanda, so, you know. I'm hoping.
Wakanda forever, baby.
Wakanda forever. One can hope. I've got a little game I'd like us all to play.
Okay.
It's called Guess the Disney Lyric Challenge.
Okay,
I didn't mean to let out that.
Marvin is going to win this. Let's play this. Am I out?
Do I not get to play?
Because no, of course you get to play, but Marvin is a serial Disney fan.
We'll see about that.
What are you getting this from?
You lie about it, but he knows it all back to front.
Wow. Oh my God, Marvin.
Mm-hmm. You're exposing yourself left, right and centre.
No, I love it.
This is not true. I'm telling you that.
Very true.
You used to watch Zoe 101. Don't lie. Like, it's okay.
Listen, Zoe 101 was... But don't,
see,
don't,
see, he's don't, the one who does that.
I mean,
that,
no, no. My sister told me that it was bad. I've never watched it myself. Personally.
Oh God, you guys are so young. So, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. Let's do this. Let's try and play this.
Okay, laughing time is over.
So what's going to happen? They're going to play a song and they're going to cut the music, and we've got to continue singing it. If not, just make up the lyrics. This could be really jokes. Let's give this a little go.
I'm not going to be good at this, really.
Let's give it a little go. Forest. Feel the fire within.
Damn.
Once you find your center, you are sure to win.
No, you're not cheating.
Yes, we got it. That's like 2 points for the girl.
You didn't even see it. You didn't even see it.
We did.
They did.
No,
they
we sung it.
Under the sea.
Fly us and eat us in fricassee.
Mate, I need
under
the music.
The sea. They were
you know the lyrics.
You want to copy us?
Under the sea, I'm there.
Goat like to cook. The seaweed and the hook.
Prince Ali, fabulous.
Ali Ababa.
Hey, come on. Go on, get one for the boys. I'll for the boys. Come on.
Then waited, you'll see.
Go on, Mark. Get one for the boys.
Come I'm not getting this one.
Oh, oh man.
Oh.
Now try your best to stay calm.
Oh. Brush off your Sunday salam. Come and meet
me.
Coco's rocking
right.
It,
the chorus.
I told you.
Under the sea. No. That's the wrong one, Rush. This is a lot.
Get me guessing. I'm nodding and I'm yesing.
Arriba!
I mean, that's what lame. Is
oh
that from?
It's from Coco.
How is it?
Oh, I've not Coco. Seen Coco.
I've never seen
Loco Coloco. I've not seen that.
Oh,
film.
Yeah, I have seen that's this, actually.
You
I have
seen the Coco.
He's the guy that's the guitar, like, plays the guitar, isn't it?
Standing straight back at me, when will my ring strike back at me? Yes, Queen. Ray ever got one.
I've kind of got this one.
Go on, Ray. Go on, go on.
Put them together and what have you got? Bibbidi bobbidi boo.
Yeah, I got that one. I got the bibbidi
bobbidi. Come on, give us a point. That's a point. Yeah, that's half a point.
What, you said bibbidi
bobbidi
boo?
Yeah. Half the lyrics.
Train like always, the same old bird across the cell.
We need to brush up on our
Disney.
Every
morning, just the same, like the morning that we came to this poor adventure. Sound good morning, Belle. Good morning, Monsieur. We're like impressing you right now.
Wow, I'm actually impressed. Yeah, a little bit pizza, a little bit impressed.
All those Disney auditions.
I've never had such a simple bare necessities. You forget about your worries and your strife. Yeah, man, I mean that. Bare necessities of Mother Nature's recipes.
I mean the bare necessities.
Come on, Ray, go on, go on.
Bare necessities.
Hey. Just the bare necessities.
Remix, come on.
Oh, come on, man. You are people.
Tell her this, well.
People who Pocahontas think like you.
Marvy, but you know what I'm
bro, this came out when I was born.
Of a stranger, you'll learn things you never knew you never.
The girls are cheating.
Yeah,
the girls are clearly
cheating. We just
cheating. Having there is Clary lyrics on the screen.
Yeah. I can see the lyrics on the screen, man. Right?
Oh, wait, we've got Google here.
Okay, ready? Mr. Aladdin, sir, what would your pillow please? We take your order, jot it down. You ain't never had a friend like me.
God damn.
You guys are shit, sorry. Really, what happened in your childhood?
You know this. No, go on, bro. Go on, no, you know it.
No, this is
you've watched this about 5 times.
Anymore. Please open the door. Oh, Jew. I started talking to the pictures on the wall. Hanging there, Joan.
Well, I'm even the ugliest, like. Damn.
Just make it up, man.
Hang in there, mate.
Make it up. And go.
Santa Claus is coming down. Coming down.
Yes, okay.
Coming down. Da, 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 da. My fair lady.
Something shower drain, cleaning out
the
toilet.
What the hell? You guys literally said that word for word exactly the same.
Did you watch this before they came here? Wow, it's mad.
I mean, there's a connection here. I don't know
why. Marvin, letting the team down. I've got half a point. I've got half a point. Where's your point at?
There's a set of demand.
Yeah, I've got half a point.
I got that.
All right, go on, boys. You take this one.
Yeah.
Spit some bars.
I don't know what
you're
saying.
Nearly.
It's close.
Go on, Ray. Go on, Ray. Hit this one.
I'm regressing so well. And almost kind. And he was mean and he was coarse and everything. Now he's sweet and so unsure. I wonder why I never felt it there before.
Wow, these things definitely didn't go out when they were young.
Yeah, trust me, stayed in front of the TV.
Well, I can say that we absolutely won that round.
Just
smashed
it.
Like,
by like one point, by like one point, like
we won it fair and square.
It was
like
head to head.
Sorry, girls win.
They had the lyrics on the screen, we didn't, so I guess we won.
We won. I want the rock to know. Oh. You know the lyrics of this one to Diana Ross, but not any of those.
It's Diana.
The Disney classics.
Diana,
all right, chill. It's like we rehearsed that or something.
I mean,
this is brilliant.
Basically,
mean, I'm feeling like show number two.
Show number two.
Maybe be like a
TV
show.
Can we just do this? Just do a Disney show.
The Disney guess the lyric show on a loop.
On a loop. Oh my god.
Literally, put the loop in.
Back row and chill with Noel Clark and Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
We've got Tova Lee in the studio, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, that's not the right thing. Here we go.
I love it.
We go big here. Go big or go home, basically. Amazing. That's my thing.
I love it.
I knew you before I knew you, basically, because I'd seen your videos whizzing around the internet on Facebook.
So you were one of the three. No,
I was one of the three people. Me, your mum, and your husband. Yeah, it was really great because you do really refreshing... I'm not going to say rant videos because they're not like angry, but they're just like, do you know what I mean? You have a mouth, you have a voice, and you're not afraid to use it. And you say the stuff that most people think in their head, which is, I think, why you resonate with so many
girls. Oh my God, I come across as not angry, so I guess I'm a really good actress. I'm furious. I'm so furious. I've actually discovered that if you smile, you can basically say anything, and people kind of go, oh, she's cute, as long as you smile.
Yeah.
No, I started like a couple of years ago, and it was literally at the point where I just couldn't, like, you know, I was like, I can't take this anymore. Like, somebody has to just say, oh my God, being a mom sucks sometimes, you know? So yeah, I'm a mom, by the way.
You're a mom of,
yeah, of three girls. Yeah, I've been a mom now for 7 years. Yeah, and I love my kids. You have to say that, okay? We have to start
disclosure.
By saying, we have to, exactly. I love my kids. I love them, love them, love them. But they are pains in the ass. So yeah, so that's kind of how it started. I basically wrote an article saying, I love my kids, but sometimes I wish they would fuck off.
Okay.
And I literally didn't mean anything to happen with it.
Oh, you started on a blog.
Yeah, it started on a blog. And then I suddenly got, like, you know, loads of people just sending in messages saying, oh my God, thank you for saying that, because I literally feel that way. And it kind of like went from there. So I started doing videos and
that's your full-time job.
And now it's my full-time job. Yeah, basically complaining about my kids.
It's great.
I've expanded since then. By the way, I complain about my husband now, the dogs, everything.
The weather, everything.
Everything.
A professional complainer.
With a smile.
With a smile.
With a smile.
Which means that it's not a negative thing.
Exactly.
It's great. It's like constructive criticism on the universe.
Exactly.
But it's good. And I remember as well, so a couple of other friends that I know, they'd seen your videos and they're like, oh, you know that Tova lady. I love her. Oh my gosh. So I think that, yeah, you're getting like a really positive response. And guys as well, not just women following you. Guys, there are dads out there.
Yeah, there are dads that follow the page. At the beginning, it was a bit weird. I was like, okay. But actually, since then, I have started talking about other things. A lot of them do include vaginas and, you know, women's stuff. But I don't know. The guys are there, I guess, because they're interested. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff, parenting stuff, obviously appeals to the dads as well. And, you know, there's a lot of young people as well now recently. Yeah. Young followers, not just parents, because I talk a lot about body shaming and, you know.
Yes. And one thing that you do really well on your Instagram, and I love this, is that you imitate or take the piss out of parody a lot of, like, the celebs kind of photoshopped glamorous images, and then you do like a real version of it, which is just amazing.
Yeah, and I think like we all do that. Like, I put filters on my stuff as well. Oh, obviously, yeah. We all do. Like, you know?
I try and keep it real. Yeah. So I will use. I put my hand up. I'll use filters.
Yeah,
and then I'll every so often I will try and do like no makeup vlogging on my Instagram and stuff, and try and be like, yep, no filter, no makeup, and
I do the same. Like, I obviously use filters sometimes, but I started doing all these parody videos, especially not so much celebrities but the sport ones. So like, this is, everybody's into fitness today. And by the way, it's funny because sometimes people say to me, what, you want to like be, you know, you want to be fat, you don't want to like work out? And it's not about that. I love working out, but I only do stuff that I really enjoy. So like, anyway, we do these sport videos, these people that are into like extreme sport, and they're amazing, by the way. Like, they're really, really fit. And me and my husband just kind of like do it in the garden, and neither of us are extremely fit, so
not professional athletes.
Not professional. Yes, don't try this at home, if you know what I mean.
What did your husband think when you were first, like, did you discuss it with him, or did it kind of happen and he got on board with it later? Does he understand?
First of all, my husband is so British.
Okay.
Like, you've met him,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so you know, right? He's in his 50s, right? And he is so British. But he just goes along with anything.
Yeah.
I have no idea why he does it. Like, till this day, I just don't understand. And sometimes I'll ask him to do stuff and he'll go, okay. And I'll go, but you're really, I don't know, like, aren't you like conservative? Like, aren't you like,
you're like
British?
An adult. You're an adult.
Yeah, you're an adult. And he's like, yeah, but I understand that it's comedy. He's great. He just goes along with it. So he's been great. When I started, I don't think he knew that any of this was going to happen and that it would become like a job and stuff. He's up for for it, so that's good.
And one thing, I have a couple of conversations with people when I talk about, like, oh, I work on the internet, and I kind of put, to a degree, a lot of my life, private and non-private, on there. And people are like, oh, but, like, how do you feel about putting kids on the internet and stuff? And so did you make a conscious decision to be like, yeah, because your kids feature a lot in your stories because they're so funny and they're part of the comedy?
It's weird. You know, at the beginning, it bothered me more because it was such a new thing, and I didn't know where it was going to go. Till this day, I don't really use their real names anywhere. Ah. So, like, their names have never been revealed, like, not their real names.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah. And they don't, you know, they feature in videos, but not as often as they could have, you know. And actually, my eldest is into it now. Like, she likes doing it. So, like, you know, I'll let her do it. She's the 7-year-old. My twins are completely not interested. So, you know, we don't force them or anything like that. But, yeah.
You must perform.
Yeah. But then when you think about it, everybody has, like, when you look at other people's Instagrams, whatever, a lot of people have their kids. I don't know. I feel like we can't, you have to protect them, but then you can't also, like, put them in a bubble. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It has to, there has to be, you know, some sort of balance. Yeah.
I'm kind of the same. Like, yeah, you can, I don't personally. Like, if you put your kids on the internet.
Yeah, tell me.
Yeah, I think where I sit, and everyone has to go with what they feel. I mean, it might be different. I might have a kid and be like, nobody look at them ever. She's precious. But I feel like, yes, there are some dark people and weirdos on the internet, but that kind of comes with, and it is always through that filter, like they're not physically going to be near you.
It's funny because you don't even think about what they understand. So obviously I explain to my kids that this is my job, and it's important for me, like, to tell them that this is work rather than, because, you know, we're all addicted to our phones and social media, and they often see me with my phone, and it bugs me, you know, as an addict to social media. You know, but then again, I sort of make a point to sometimes say I'm actually doing some work, whatever. They did a live with me once. My eldest did a live with me, and I had to explain before that the people that I'm talking to right now are strangers. I don't know them. You don't know them. We don't know them, you know. So then a couple of weeks later, I had a Skype call with somebody that I actually know, but they live overseas. And she kind of went, but mommy, that it's a stranger. Like, you can't say my name.
Strangers in the computer.
And, and now I have to explain the difference between a Skype call and a Facebook live. Yeah.
Yes. Because you've been doing this now for like a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. Where do you, like, want to go with this if you're driving this? Like, would you like to have a talk show? Would you like a, because you're an actress, would you like a sketch show?
Yeah.
In the wildest dreams.
I mean, to be honest, all of this is like, makes me laugh because I did not see this coming. Yeah. I did not plan this. I know your background's acting as well. I was an actress and I left that world thinking that was it after I became a mom.
Yeah.
And this just is so random to me right now, but I am writing a book. And again, I was a bit like, oh, why would I write a book? Who would read it?
You know? 100%. Think of all the young moms.
Yeah. And
the new moms. I don't have to be young, but like, there's a lot of new old moms. But
yeah.
Technically. But that would be a great thing to read.
Yeah.
So I, like a real, you know, because you get those pregnancy books, what to expect when you're expecting. I'd prefer to read one that you write.
Aww.
Do you know what I mean? You're going to be real. Like, I found out the other day about, like, the, what's it called? The like, the perineum tears thing. Oh. Like, and nobody tells you this shit.
Nobody tells you that
you have to massage the little piece between your ass and your vagina, otherwise it can tear.
You really need to massage
it. You need to massage that shit, or that's going to just break on you. And, like, this is not in the movies. I mean, even in the movies, you have the baby and everyone's like, ah, they don't do the afterbirth.
No.
There's all these things. I think being a girl, there's like a backstreet.
They've improved in movies. Like, before it was, you know, lying down going, push, no, push. And like 3 pushes, the baby's out, and then everybody's smiling and she's sort of still somehow looking semi-normal.
No.
But they've improved since then. But you're right. The after baby, that's what they don't show
they
you.
They don't show that.
The walking around the house, like with the breast pumps, just going. They don't. The sound effect, because that's what you need, you know? Oh my God. Crying. Oh.
Yeah. I wish that there was more realistic portrayal, because I hear like rumors on, you know, in the schoolyard or wherever, and it's just like you're in a bar with some friends and someone's like, have you heard about this? That can actually happen, and you're like, Why does nobody mention this in the handbook of being a woman?
You know, but some people, like, tell me sometimes, because I do videos and I tell everything. Like, I'll say everything. Yeah. And then people will say to me, you know, Tova, I feel like you're really scaring young moms. Like, you're scaring women. They won't want to have babies.
You know, there's enough people in the world, so.
There is, yeah. We're overpopulated.
Is that really so bad?
You're actually helping the population control, actually.
Exactly.
So, that's great.
Back Row and Chill with Noel Clark and Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
You're listening to Back Row and Chill, Johanna James, and today with Tej World.
Tej, that's me.
A huge welcome, thank you, to Jim Bradshaw. He's the head of film in the awards team at BAFTA. So thank you very much for coming in.
Come
huge
on,
actually, you deserve the fanfare. The BAFTA.
Yes. Oh, I salute you. I salute you. Yes, Jim, I salute you. This is the godfather of the BAFTAs, really. Like,
that's what they call me.
You know what I mean? He's like the Wiley equivalent. You know, you could be, if the NME didn't film, the Wiley of the BAFTAs right now. That's it. I've crowned you.
Thank you very much. I accept the crown.
There you go.
Amazing. So, I was so excited that you were going to be coming in so that we could sort of pick your brains. Because for a lot of our listeners, my level of award show knowledge is, well, I kind of see the outside of it. I see the glitz and the red carpet, and I sort of check
which
up
is
on
a big part of it.
I check up on who's won what and stuff, but I don't really know the process of how anything would even get to be viewed or awarded anything. Who really chooses what wins, and how do we ensure that the real winner actually wins?
Because, I mean, if I was doing the envelopes, yeah, okay, yeah. Right, I was the independent adjudicator, you know, like the man with the white gloves from the lottery, yeah, I would just put my name in all the envelopes. I'd be best actress, best supporting actress, best female, lifetime achievement. It'd be Tej.
Well, that's my job to make sure that doesn't happen.
That doesn't happen. So you trust this lady?
We trust that, yeah.
Can I get her phone number so I can...
Well, so BAFTA is 6,500 members.
Sheesh!
So that is 6,500 people who have made a significant contribution to their area of filmmaking.
Uh-huh.
One of whom is Noel Clark.
Yes.
He's on the team.
So, you know, people who have made films, won BAFTAs in the past.
Yeah.
And obviously going back years and years, so... 6,500 people who really know what they're talking about in terms of great editors, great directors.
Definitely. And so a range of different people.
Yeah,
that's good.
Sure,
so it's not
bad. That 6,500 includes people working on every type of filmmaking, from locations to production design to props to absolutely everything you can think of on a film set and post-production.
An eclectic bunch, yeah.
And so they vote in the first round, get into the nominations, they all vote, so they all watch as many films as they can, vote for the ones that they really loved.
Uh-huh.
They all vote for best film, they all vote for the performers. And then in the other categories, the editors will vote for the editors, the directors will vote for the directors, so they're getting that really specialist knowledge.
Oh, okay, yeah. That seems fair. So directors are voting for other directors.
That's good.
Like that.
And then once they've done that, in the second round, when we get to this point, when we've got our five films in each category, then everybody votes for their winner. So everybody gets to have their say on what they think the best visual effects or the best editing or whatever is. Because obviously, they, you know, in the real world, they're all working together to make films, so they've all got their own opinions on it, so...
Wow, that sounds amazing.
So it's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people,
and
that's
what's important about it, because
that's
it's not 12 people sitting
that's
in a room.
That's what I thought. It was like nights at the round table.
No, yeah,
you know,
I thought it was
Last Supper
like a...
kind of thing, and everyone just decides.
Yeah, that would be so easy.
Yeah,
you know, if it's 12 people in a room, that's so easy for somebody to sway it, or you've got to make sure that those 12 people are biased and representative, and it's impossible.
Yeah, we'd get a bit Vladimir Putin, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Which is something, you know, that's another part of my job, making sure none of that sort of stuff goes on. Digital security is my biggest headache at the moment.
Serious?
Making sure everything's unhackable and
Okay.
I probably shouldn't talk about that too much on air.
No, that's good. So we know it's secure.
Yeah.
That's put my mind at ease, because I'm like, what if, you know, 6 and 12 people, then obviously you're going to get nominated.
Yeah.
Actually, I was thinking I've only got a chance to make 12 friends, but now I know I've got to make 6,000
friends.
6,500
Yeah, it's not going to happen now.
It's hard to bribe 6,500 people. You've got to have a lot of Rolexes to give away.
And is it my understanding that the board of people who are on BAFTA, you get to come together like a committee and think up sort of new guidelines and rules
and things?
Yeah,
absolutely. So that's another big part of my job. So when people say, you know, what do you do the rest of the year? As soon as the ceremony's finished, film and the process of making film is always changing, especially with technology. And, you know, so every year things will come up and we're looking at what went well the year before, where we need to make tweak categories, where we may need to be looking at, you know, are there new things happening?
Yeah.
So like over the last few years, we really changed the move from special effects, which is like explosions and things happening in real life, to visual effects, where it's all digital and computers. And
yeah.
That's happened over the last sort of 15 years. But, you know, there's always things changing like that. But also, like, processes and the voting and kind of, you know, tweaking, are we doing things in the best way to get to the best results? That process happens immediately. So the day after the Film Awards, we go straight into that. And there's a committee of people, which, again, one of whom is Noel Clark,
yeah.
who do that process. So that's a committee of people from the membership. And, again, it's directors, editors, writers. So that's a representative group as well, and they kind of make the decisions on what yeah. those rule changes should be. And that's the bit I enjoy most about the job. So when we get to the point where you have to apply the rules,
mm-hmm.
and we have to have discussions about what's a documentary, what's a British film, and kind of work out these definitions that are right, and they're yeah. always changing.
Yeah. One really exciting thing that Noel actually, he told me last week, was about the change of rule to make diversity one mm-hmm. of the key
yeah.
things.
You've got a good ethic and drive towards that.
Yeah, well, it's something we've been trying to do for a long time. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of stuff alongside the awards. All of our awards have special categories that offer new talent, and that's something that we've always done. And then we have a lot of work the rest of the year that goes on that people don't get to see, where we work with up-and-coming talent to give them opportunities to match them with members, and like mentoring schemes and
really?
Learning schemes and all that kind of stuff. So that's something that's very much at the heart of what BAFTA does. And one of the things that we've done this year, which will come into effect for the next couple of years,
yes.
is we're BFI have diversity standards, which
okay.
is saying, are the crew of this film diverse? Does it talk about underrepresented stories? Like what's happening on screen, what's happening off screen? What education opportunities were available on this film.
Wow.
And what we've done is we're going to say that from 2019,
yes.
any film in our British categories,
yes.
British feature categories, will have to have met those standards. They will either have to be telling
down,
a story from an underrepresented group, you know, on screen. On-screen diversity is one part of it, or they're making sure that their crew is diverse
yeah.
as possible. And it's a really good system that the BFI have put together, because it means that there are some types of films, some types of stories that
mm-hmm.
you can't really...
You can't put minorities in every... Because like, I was thinking that.
Yeah.
I was like, there might be a story about, I don't know, 18th century Sweden.
Exactly.
Which necessarily you couldn't
so
really
say,
fill.
Yeah. Say you want to make a Jane Austen adaptation. You can't shoehorn minorities
yeah.
into that, because they,
true.
You know, it's hard
true.
To do.
Yeah, but
I mean, it's doable,
and that's
but
fair
you,
enough.
It's harder.
But then you the opportunity to fill the crew and get through with
exactly.
a diverse crew. Because,
yeah,
like you said, it's a film. It's not just people on the front of the screen.
Yeah,
it is, a film is everybody behind
yeah, exactly.
it as well.
What's interesting is that
so
diversifying what's in
through.
Front of the camera
mm.
is the easy bit.
Easy.
Because actually it's mm. really easy to give opportunities to other writers and other actors
yeah.
and get different stories told. Actually, that is the easy,
easy.
Bit. If there's a will to do it,
mm-hmm.
that's the easy bit. Actually, getting people to the level where they can be heads of department off camera in terms of cinematographers
mm.
and editors, and that's the bit that's hard
yeah.
and that's the bit that the industry is kind of going, that's what really needs to change, because that's what's really going to affect
but
meaningful
say,
diversity.
Say if you are like a DOP or whatever, and you want to be in contact with this initiative, like, is there a way they can make themselves heard, or do BAFTA seek out these people?
It's a bit of both. So if you're already working in the industry and you're a DOP or trying to be a DOP, we
yeah.
have something called BAFTA Crew, which is for people working in those, what we below the line things, are the ones that, you know,
mm.
and that's a sort of structured program that anybody can apply to be on.
Is
and
it?
You have to have one, I think it's one or two credits on something, and it can doesn't have to be a film, it can be like a music video or a documentary
really?
Or whatever.
It's good that also allows people to see that not everyone has to be in front of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
There's
yeah.
so much that happens behind it,
yeah.
and it's good that it's showing that, and something like
yeah,
that
yeah.
and this program will teach that and show
yeah.
that there are other ways to get into film without having to be
yeah totally
the
I,
next,
was, I was reading something the other day that was saying, like, no matter what you want to do, no matter what your skills are, no matter what your talents are,
yes.
you can do it in film.
You can,
mm.
yeah.
You know, props, costumes, lighting, music, all sorts of things.
Pushing buttons.
Pushing
catering,
buttons. Catering.
Catering
exactly.
is one of the most important things.
Yeah. Trust me.
Unit nurses, everything that exists, exists
oh
on a film
gosh.
Set because... You know,
it's
their
like,
whole little world to
yeah.
themselves.
And it,
yeah.
it makes a difference. I've been on film sets where if the food is amazing,
yeah.
then everybody else is happy. Everyone, like, gets into their job. Everyone goes for it. If the
yeah.
food's bad, everybody is focusing on the food rather than on the job and everything.
Yeah.
Something like that is just is
I've
so
I've got a friend
important.
Who's a producer, and she says that's the first thing she sorts out is the food because
yeah.
everything... If people don't get food,
it rolls
nothing
down.
Else
true.
Is going to work.
Trust me, and you go on to say, and because me, yeah, like, me without food is not a happy day for nobody. It's not
me
a happy
too,
world.
Me too.
I'm sure the earth will stop spinning, the hearts will stop beating if I'm hungry and on set. Hangry!
Hangry,
with
yeah.
a capital H! yeah? And the things I remember going on the set, I'm not going to say what it was. It was a comedy that I was doing. I went on, I asked for a bacon sandwich, and because I wasn't the star on the show at the time, I think they forgot my order, and then she brought me a blueberry muffin.
That's not the same.
The runner brought me.
The same.
Do you know what? I would have let it slide if she brought me a sausage. Not even if she brought me a chocolate chip muffin, but blueberry muffin. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, she's trying to.
Was there
to
a
make
tantrum?
Me,
was there a star
teacher,
tantrum?
I didn't know you were a diva. Shut up, mate.
I was about to get Jackie Chan.
Yeah, roll over Mariah Carey. Yeah. Teacher's here.
So, and you also have, what I really like, I always look out for the rising star because it's interesting to see who's coming up and who's.
Yes, oh, who is.
Yeah, and
who
I think this is a great list this year, actually.
Let's see.
Yeah. So, obviously, Noel announced these for us. The rising star, and this is the one that's voted for by the public. This is where the public do get to have their say on an award. It's interesting because sometimes you get people that are at different stages in their careers.
Yeah.
Whereas this year, I think all five are people that have really landed this year, certainly in terms of their film careers.
The young guy who is going to be the next Spider-Man, mm-hmm. I was so excited that they cast a Spider-Man who was an actual teenager rather than a 25-year-old playing 19. They cast a teenager and he looks it.
What they did in Captain America was sort of introducing him as a cameo in Captain America so that everyone's ready and excited for him. So Tom Holland, he's British, and then the range of people there, so I don't know if you guys saw a film called Victoria, which came out in the summer. So it's this German film that was done in
one single take, the whole film.
So it's about this girl going on a night out, and she gets involved with these. So she's a Spanish girl living in Berlin, and she gets involved with these guys. She's just going home from work. She gets involved with these drunk guys, and the night takes a bad turn, and it's just all taken. So the camera is just following them around Berlin.
Whoa.
Takes in one take, and the girl, Lia Costa, who plays Victoria, this incredible performance, and would be an incredible performance in a normal film, let alone that she is doing it
in one take.
Well, they sort of improvised it, apparently. So they did it, obviously they had to do it over a number of nights, so they just sort of ran the thing 6 or 7 times, I think.
That is
and
mad.
Then the one that is on the film is, I think, the 6th night they did it. And you watch it on 2 levels, because you're watching it, and it's a good film, it's a really exciting film, it's a sort of thriller, so you're really excited about it. But then on the other hand of it, as someone who loves film, you're watching it going, how the hell did they do that? How the hell did they get the camera into the car without...
No,
you know, there's bits where they're getting
that.
In and out of cars. Then, obviously, it ends up being, I won't give too much away, but there's chases. And
chases
there's like, you know, and it's all seamless.
You
and
think,
all,
cause you think,
the cinematographer... did a ridiculous
is it
job
done on one so one camera two cameras
literally one camera
one camera
one take,
take
no cutting
and it's not like Birdman or some of those things where it seems to be one take and it's fake that's not an exclusive
because I'm thinking okay if they run some super track and they've got like a super dolly and a super track like going through like they're running through a car but then you can't run that much track then they must be like a steady cam and then which one do you pick
you watch it on these two levels because you're watching it going I'm so into the story so into these characters but then how did they do that? Someone I was talking to about said, just thinking about all the people that must have been running around, like stopping traffic and stopping people coming into
Behind. Oh my gosh. Yeah, can you imagine the logistics of it must have
just been ridiculous. I think they did it at like 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
Imagine trying to bash the wires for that. Or even if they did it with like a battery thing, how are you going to change while he's still going?
Yeah.
I would love to see that. They have to do it behind the scenes. Please, please let them do it.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted there to be a documentary that shows the other side of it.
How to make it.
I could see this being a new genre. One take.
Yeah.
Best one take film. I love the direction that things are going in. And it's so good to hear that it's forever changing. Like having like the things like draw animation. I guess that wasn't always there. And like, and
I think it's been there for a while. Yeah. But certainly, again, that's where people who make short animations aren't always new talent, but they often are. And certainly these guys, I think.
I believe the BAFTA is in good hands, in your hands.
Thank you very much.
I'm filled with confidence now.
And just on a personal level as well, just wanted to ask what your favourite performances and movies, just not as someone from BAFTA, but just as in yourself, what have you really enjoyed and liked for our audiences
nice position this year of genuinely liking all of the films that nominated, certainly in Best Film. Some years you're kind of a bit like, some of these aren't so great, but I see why they're nominated, but I don't like them. Whereas this year I really love them all. I'm not supposed to pick one, but if I had to, I would pick Moonlight. It's just a really great film about sort of coming of age thing. Again, what we were talking about before about diversity, a kind of story that hasn't really been told.
No. Can I get your opinion on this year, right? Like, I'm advocating for this to happen, yeah? Okay, because you know they're remaking a lot of films at the moment, all right?
Yeah.
I think it's time that they make Demolition Man.
Remake Demolition Man. And who do you want to see in that?
That's what I'm saying. Who would you cast as Wesley Snipes and as,
I can see Noel going at it in this film.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Don't make me choose who's going to be who,
I mean, me as Wesley Snipes, you know.
I thought you'd probably want to be Wesley
Snipes.
I don't know how Noel would feel about being Sly.
I don't know. Maybe Tom Hardy or someone younger.
Yeah, Tom Hardy, or maybe go different routes, some like Ryan Gosling or something. Chris Pine, maybe.
Ryan Gosling.
There's no one that can replace Sly, really. Sly is Sly.
He's true. It's true. Well, I'm going to have a think about it, and we're going to make this happen this year. Okay. We shall make
amazing.
It. All right.
I look forward to getting you nominated next year.
There you go. That's our film nominated. Plus, we've got Inside Man, so it's going to happen. And if we can't do it, Putin will.
Back Row and Chill with Noel Clark and Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
Hopefully, Chris Addison is on the line. Let's have a little look. Chris, are you there?
It's true, I'm here. I'm yes. here using the magic of telephones.
It's magic, isn't it? I still don't know how they work. But
I don't
can...
know either.
Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure, thanks for having me.
Right, so I have heard all about your new show today, which I was like, oh, didn't know about that. It's the Glyndebourne Opera Cup, which sounds like yes. it's in Harry Potter, which I love, first of all.
Yes.
And it's an international singing competition about...
Yes.
young opera stars, which I was like, oh, love this move.
So Glyndebourne is, it does sound like something out of Harry Potter.
Doesn't
in fact,
it?
It's a country house down in Sussex where for 84 years, every summer, there's been opera all summer. In fact, to the point where a few years ago, they built their own massive, amazing opera house in the grounds. It's brilliant. It's a beautiful place. And they have started competition for singers between 21 and 28, which is just a great way of them getting a sort of leg up into the highly competitive world Ooh. Of opera.
21, 28, that means I can compete if I want to. TJ, sorry, mate, I think you're just out of that, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I'm just out of that bracket, but...
Damn.
Don't worry, TJ, there's plenty of other competitions you can enter, I'm sure you're...
I'm not worried, I just feel bad for Glyndebourne for missing out on such talent.
Yeah, I'm absolutely. Talent, that it's
is
fundamentally
me.
Their loss. Yeah,
yeah I know. Yeah. Thank you. I know you... All right, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah,
man. So, Chris, you're known for your comedy and your acting yeah. and your directing. Why the move to the opera?
I mean, it's not... Well, is it a move? Just me doing a thing that I really like. So I've been a fan of opera for years. I've come down to Glyndebourne every summer for the last 20 years or so.
Okay.
And I love it. It's just the most incredible art form. It's yeah. the best singing you could possibly hear at close range. It's amazing. It's beautiful and moving and all of the things that you want out of going to see somebody mm. performing.
And Chris, have you seen the new Amadeus production at the National?
Do you know what? I still haven't. Because I couldn't get tickets. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Is it amazing?
Yeah, it is. It's a really clever, it's almost a modernised version. It's half modern, right. half true to the sort of original 18th century. Like, so they have mobile phones, but they're in costume. Mozart wears Doc Martens. And it's just
brilliant. That's good.
It's so good. Because I think it's shows like Amadeus and maybe like Phantom of the Opera, growing up, they were my only real experience of opera.
Yeah. Mm.
So this is kind of cool. Sky Arts is making a move for young yeah. people. Making yeah. opera cool.
Can I?
Yeah. Because the thing about it is, right, it's obviously, it's one of those things where you hear that word and instantly in your head you sort of see people in tiaras and dicky bows and all of that eating caviar off poor people. And none of it is actually like that.
Yeah.
I was telling this story the other day about, like, the best thing I ever saw in a comedy club, like, about 20 years ago when I started out, it was in a really, but, you know, back before the smoking ban and all that, proper
yes.
smoky, stale beer and sweat kind of comedy club.
Yes.
And it was a Friday night with a properly drunk crowd and the MC, you know, just doing that kind of, oh, what are you do to the audience? And this girl said, I'm an opera student. And he went, shut up. Go on then, sing us a song. And she stood up and she sang this song, which I know where that's from now, but I didn't then. All I knew was I'd heard it on adverts and in films and stuff. And she sang this song, it's a song called O Mio Bambino Caro by Puccini. It's so beautiful. And no one was expecting her to do it, but she stood up and she started to sing. And people immediately went silent. Like a proper drunk Friday night crowd went totally silent.
Yeah.
And when she finished, they went lunatic, like proper kind of X Factor winner
wow.
crazy. Because you're hearing a human doing a superhuman thing. Because
yeah.
they're using the voice, which is like the most yeah. basic instrument you could use, in the most ninja of possible way. There's something incredibly moving about it. It just sort of strikes you, right? And it makes your bones shake. It's sort of just there in you to sort of hear that and be moved by it. And that entire crowd, who are very, you know, a very tough bunch of Mancunians, were just on the ceiling by the end of it. Yeah, I think it's for anybody, you see. I think once you get rid of all of the sort of trappings of the cliches of it, if you just
yeah,
listen to what people
sure.
are doing, it's gorgeous, man.
Yes. Can I ask you, what are your thoughts about contemporary opera to classical opera?
Yeah.
And are you against opera not being sung in Italian?
Well, I think you should do what you want to do with it. The material is there, now do what you want with it. Kind of like that Amadeus production that you're talking about. And Amadeus was only written in the 70s, but it definitely wasn't written with Doc Martens, and obviously there weren't mobile phones then.
Yeah.
But that's a legitimate adaptation, right? I think you should be able to do anything. So I think opera should be allowed to be sung in whatever language you want. It definitely helped if the composer wrote it in a certain language. That's the music that they've got in their ears.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Well,
when they're writing it.
A bit
bit jolting, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And but so that's the thing. But it doesn't stop you from doing it in English. And I think the idea of modern operas, that's vital. There are companies around the world who are really doing their best to commission new works and get quite modern stuff going. There's an opera house in Philadelphia, if you Google, and the stuff they do is absolutely amazing. But there's stuff happening in our country as well. There's a great woman, fabulous young opera director called Daisy Evans, and she has this thing called silent opera. And you turn up to this tunnel in Bermondsey, and it's like there's only a handful of you, and they've pre-recorded the orchestra, and you listen to headphones. The singing is live, but it's sort of mic'd and mixed live into your ears, into your earphones. And they're walking among you during the production, and you're sort of it's like an experience and stuff. All of that stuff's really fantastic because it's keeping the whole thing live and new, and it's renewing it and all the things that any kind of art needs to survive, you know.
Back Row and Chill with Noel Clark and Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
I'm going to play a little bit now of my interview with Nina Dobrev from the XXX movie. Wow, how did you get involved with XXX?
Well, I had to audition and fight for it. They didn't really see me as the techie,
geeky
girl.
Yeah.
Be in the workforce. Now I'm not in high school or college on screen. I'm finally
grown up.
I'm finally grown up. So it was a welcome challenge. I had a lot of fun playing this role.
Because this role brings a lot of comedy to the film. It's like you're a good comedic relief. It's a geeky girl. She's hot, but she's geeky, but she's funny. Is comedy something more, because it is a step to the side for you, this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is comedy something more you want to go down?
Definitely, yeah. I've done a few things as of late in that genre, and it might be my favorite so far. I mean, getting paid to work and laugh all day and try new things and be goofy, like, I really couldn't believe that this was happening. The whole time I was just running around, falling over, geeking out on people and talking too much and being a klutz. So it was so fun.
Back Row and Chill with Noel Clark and Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.